everybody. Welcome to Real Talk with Maria. Maria Young here, your host. I am a loan officer with CNT Mortgage, and today I have an appraiser on with me. Reggie, say hi.
Hello, everybody.
Reggie is with Sterling Valuation, and Reggie is the last facet of the home buying process that I wanted to have on the podcast. So a lot of people do and a lot of people don't know what an appraisal does, is for, functions for, much less what an appraiser does or what an appraiser is. So, Reggie, I brought you on because I want you to educate my viewers and my listeners on what you do and why it's so important in the home buying process.
The lender brings us in towards the end of the mortgage process, as she said, and we're chosen to give value to the property. We evaluate the condition and the size, and we compare it to recent sales and active listings in the market and come up with a number for the loan.
Okay. And so some of you, just to let you guys know, it's against the law for loan officers to talk to the appraiser before they assess the situation.
It's against the law for anybody affiliated in the mortgage industry whose income is dependent upon the closing of loans.
So it's a big, so this is why we use third-party companies.
Yes, appraisal management companies.
Mm-hmm. And they will pick an appraiser. And, you know,
it's randomized.
Okay.
Yeah, round robin type thing.
Okay.
They put us in a rotation. There's usually 3 to 5 at least, like for a minimum.
I don't mess with it at all. Like our processors order from the company that sends out the order.
Right.
And we cannot speak to the appraiser until after everything's been done. Report has been turned in, so on and so forth. So a lot of you guys have asked me the question, what's the difference between an inspection and an appraisal? So, Reggie, can you answer that for my viewers and my listeners?
As an appraiser, we have to inspect home systems, make sure they have their basic functionality.
Mm-hmm.
An inspector's job goes much deeper than that. They don't assign any type of value.
Okay.
Our main purpose is to value the home, tell the bank what it's worth, what they're getting their hands on, if they get it out of default, how long it's going to take them to market the thing to get rid of it.
Okay.
An inspector's job, they go out, they test every plug. They test all the HVAC, the plumbing, all the electrical systems.
Mm-hmm.
They check every plug. They test for the fall and the degrees from your registers to your condenser in your attic. Like, that's their job. They do a very detailed, in-depth of the function systems of the house.
Okay.
All right, we have to just verify that they're functioning.
I see.
We don't have to give them.
So you don't necessarily check for, like, deficits, right?
If I walk into a house in the middle of summer and the AC's on and it's set for 72 and it's like 85 degrees, okay, then something's wrong with the HVAC. I've got to report that. I've got to say that something's deficient.
Okay.
Okay, if I walk in there and I turn the sink on in the kitchen and it's a trickle,
mm-hmm.
All right, it's not working the way it's supposed to.
Okay.
Okay, that little things like that, the obvious. We're supposed to report what the typical informed buyer observes when they come into the house. So
that's a way easier way to put it. That's understandable.
Our observance of the systems is more of a lay view of things,
okay.
and the inspector's is a much more in-depth technical view of the home systems.
Well, that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. And as an appraiser, like, would you suggest that home buyers get an inspection before they spend the money on the appraisal?
Yes. There's so many things in a house that can go wrong. Foundation, roof, electrical, plumbing systems, all that.
That's the biggest pushback I get. It's like, well, why do I need to get an inspection if I'm going to get an appraisal? And it's like, well, at this point, we can still get your money back if you want to back out of the deal if you see that something's not.
Yeah, they're not the same. One could tell you what it's worth, and the other tells you how well it functions.
Okay.
Okay. Nobody would go onto the stock market and spend $500,000 and buy some stock that they've heard about without having somebody like a stockbroker tell them, it's a pretty decent stock to get your hands on. You're probably going to do well performing with this, okay? It's the same for a home.
Okay.
You're not going to buy a $400,000 or $500,000 house without knowing if the air conditioner is ready to quit tomorrow.
Yeah. I agree. I find that, you know, I don't care how many inspections I need to do. I would rather put the money up front than it costs me later because I didn't do my due diligence. But that is the number one pushback I get from clients, like, oh, I don't need to do that.
I mean, the average foundation repair is like $25,000 to $30,000. So you buy a house that's got a deficient foundation in it, then you've got yourself a big expense once you've I think it's the single most expensive thing that can happen as far as having to have repaired. You know, even your entire roof, none of that's going to be the same. Yeah.
Anyway, so I have seen horror stories. Not too long ago, I had a client that was buying a $400,000 house, And it was only 6 years old, but it was, I had more cracks than the sidewalk, okay? And
where was it?
I think it was in Katy. And the seller's agent was, she was very proud of this house. And I'm like, well, that's nice, but it's only 6 years old. And my mama's house that's over 30 years old ain't got no cracks in it.
The problem is out in Katy, that's all old, a bunch of rice fields, okay?
Oh.
That's all it was. So they brought in fill. They raised that all up, got them all out of the floodplains, made their own bios and stuff. Like, they've created that out of farmland and rice fields at that, like muddy, soft. They have historically have had foundation issues out there in a lot of those new construction neighborhoods.
Really? Mm-hmm. Ooh, see, these are little tidbits we need to know, Reggie.
it's you got to think about what they're building on out there. A bunch of soft dirt, mud.
These are the things that, like, my viewers and my listeners and myself, we don't think about that. We don't know.
Yeah, I went to high school in Katy, and back when I was in high school, there was nothing out there.
No,
there's three high schools, and I was like 11. But it's exploded, and, they're building out there on old soggy marshland.
It is. It has come up. Just like Cypress is, it's developed.
It's next. No, it's.
Well, I remember when I moved out to Cypress 15, 20 years ago, there was cows on the other side of Barker Cypress, which is why we moved out there.
Yep.
And now.
Now you got to go to the Grand Parkway to get that effect.
Yes.
And in 5 years, it'll be 2920.
Because even Fry is.
Overrun. The traffic.
It is.
Oh, it's terrible.
I'm assuming that it's just the way it is, the way it goes. But, we have people like you to come and assess the situation. So tell me. Run down what a typical day for you looks like whenever you're actually there and you're inspecting.
No problem. The first things we do, we have to photo the entire structure, all sides, the street. The lender wants to be able to see up and down the street from that street view that the house that we're appraising is typical.
Okay.
It goes with the construction styles in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
That we're not appraising this boxy stucco townhouse in a suburban, with a bunch of traditionals around it. They want to know that kind of stuff because it affects marketability.
Huh.
Anyway, all exterior photos of the house, front, rear, any amenities, pool, outdoor, things like that, outdoor kitchens,
large pet.
That's how we start.
Oh.
Okay, so I get the outside done first. We measure, pull a tape measure around every physical inch of the property.
Wow.
And if there's second floor structure, we got to go in and do the same for it, and, third and fourth, so on. And then I go from room to room and walk in the room, look around the crown, see if there's any staining or cracks for a deficient roof or a foundation. Take a picture, go on to the next one. In the bathrooms, I'll flush the toilet and turn the sink on just to make sure the water's running.
Okay.
Basic things. If the oven's sitting there and it's got the time on it and it's relatively new, I don't worry about turning it on and checking to see if it gets up to 350 in a certain amount of time. The inspector does that.
Okay.
But we have to make sure that they have to be present. And, if I walk in a house and it's 90 degrees inside, hey, there's something wrong with the HVAC, or there's not one.
Mm-hmm.
Obvious things like that is what we're supposed to observe. I photograph every space in the house, every room, bedroom, bathroom, and then I have a checklist that I've developed over the years that I go down to. It gives me a little sub notes for, counters type and flooring types and, if it's been upgraded or updated, that kind of thing. I make those little notes on it. It takes me about 30 to 45 minutes to do the average home.
Wow.
My site visit while I'm out there doing that. It takes about 2 hours to do the average report.
Yeah, that's the fun part. That's what we all wait for and are like on pins and needles.
The problem is that the market that we work in is huge. Okay, so there's a huge amount of time lost in an appraiser's day.
Traveling.
Going from place to place. Yesterday, I looked at two files in Navasota and Cleveland. I was in the car 6 hours. I didn't get to type one report yesterday.
Wow.
So, and that slows things down, our market being so large. The typical day, I can look at two and type two. That's the easy day for me.
Okay.
I can push it up to three, then I'll start turning things a day later here or there and get, people get the angry emails, that kind of thing.
Sorry. That would be me and all the other loan officers. So whenever you walk into people's houses, is it just a habit to look at their houses like be a judge?
I'll tell you this. It's not my job to judge how people live in their home.
No.
It's my job to judge how they maintain their properties. It took me till I'd been doing this for 10 years before I quit walking in a house that had dirty dishes and dirty clothes on the floor and children's toys strung about before I stopped. Like, wow, look how these people live. And I started walking in like I do today, and I'm like, I don't even see that stuff.
Furniture. No, I'm talking about like when you go to somebody's house.
Oh, like off duty?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can't turn it off. when I go to a new city, I went to San Diego this summer, man. I'm driving around San Diego, and you're not looking at a house under $1 million. And I'm just like driving around going, wow, look at these places. And, you know, I don't turn it off. It's hard.
I bet it's hard.
I'm very hypercritical, judgmental. I keep it to myself.
Technically, that's your job.
My wheels are turning all the time with regard to the appraiser look. You know, the eye is always there.
Yeah.
Especially when I go into part of town, too. I see things when I go into certain parts of town. New adventures are trying to bring new construction to a you know, revitalizing an area, that kind of thing. And I'm just like, yeah, we'll see how that goes over here.
That is true, though. A lot of the older parts of town are changing. Like, it's drastic
working,
change.
I'd say it's working in about 7 out of 10 of the markets, too. All those inner city areas, Edo, you know, over there, Navigation.
I would never live there, but, you know.
You know, I would.
That's just me. I was raised out in the suburbs in the country, so.
I was born in South Houston, and I've lived, you know, in Houston my whole life.
Me too, and
It's, you know, the inner city things are eclectic.
Going into the city. Like, I do go into town, and then I go right back out.
That's for most. You know, if you work in town, though, then that's the new demand, the new draw. You know, Houston Heights bungalows are $1 million just because it's so close to downtown.
Yeah,
I don't get that as an appraiser or as a, you know, professionally or privately. I don't understand that. $1 million, 1,500 square foot.
I don't know. They're tiny little places.
Oh, they're boxes. They're shoe boxes with asbestos siding.
I don't. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. All right. That's where we want to live. Let's raise a family.
Yeah. No. But there's a lot of people that do.
Oh, they're countless. The wave never stops. This new yuppie, millennial yuppie, I guess, if you will. They want to brag and say they live in the Houston Heights.
I don't.
Yeah, it has no desirability to me. The streets are awful, and you're close to downtown, but the traffic that you have to get in every day is just there every day, all day.
I guess I don't have to go to downtown ever. I mean, I can work from my house if I want to, but I love going to my office because, like,
my job would benefit from being in a central location. Like, I live in the south side of Houston, Clear Lake, and my average drive time from my house to my first appointment is an hour. Because our markets are growing north and west.
Yeah.
So I'm going either from.
That's far.
Yesterday was an hour and 40 minutes from my first appointment.
So I'm Northwest Houston, and it takes me all of 20 minutes to get to the Cypress office.
You live and work in Northwest Houston. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people aren't that fortunate.
I wouldn't go and live in the city, and I mean, because again, I can work from wherever I want. I mean, that's the beauty of being a loan officer, is you can do whatever you want. As long as there's Wi-Fi, you are golden.
That's a lot of businesses now. A lot of people are figuring that out. I think it's going to change our markets a little.
Well, but I still like going to the office because I love my people. Like,
you have these people that live in the Heights right now, and they work for some petroleum company. They make $500,000 a year. Well, they found out last year that, hey, I don't have to be in the office every single day. Mm-hmm. That is going to change things.
Gosh, there's a lot of people now that have opted to, they'll go in the 1 or 2 days that they are mandated to, but otherwise they're like, you don't need me here.
The rest of the week they can be in PJs and house shoes.
I mean, we do that anyway at work.
Yeah, you'll have a little bit different work environment up right here.
Yes. I love my office. We have an amazing team of loan officers. Our processors are amazing. Our closing department rocks. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better work family.
They're in a pretty tight ship.
Well, I mean, they're doing it right. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so successful in, you know, the time that they've been in business. So I pride myself in saying that I'm part of, you know, the C&T mortgage family.
Right.
So I guess tell me what else. What got you to be an appraiser?
Ugh.
This is, yeah, I'm like.
Okay, we're going to go there, I guess.
Because why? I mean, we need more of you.
Okay, I didn't finish college, and I got, you know, so I got my little associates that you can't do much with, and I worked for Coors. I drove with a commercial driver's license for 8 years.
Really?
All over Harris County. Yeah, no, like the back of my hand.
But, like, to go from being a driver to...
Well, I was doing that, and I was making almost the same money I was making 7 years later as I was when I got hired.
I see.
One of my friends worked for a company called Betts Realty Management.
Mm-hmm.
They do, like, the big strip center. Like, they own them and lease them out and that kind of thing. And he, through those connections, he had met an appraiser and got his appraiser license and started his own little company. Somebody I went to high school with.
And is it hard?
To get your license? Very.
Really?
Today, after 2009, after the real estate market tanked and all that, the state of Texas restructured our industry. And today you have to have a bachelor's degree to get an appraiser license.
Seriously?
Yes. 4-year, anything business related.
Wow.
Then you have to train under somebody like myself for 18 months minimum. It's 2,500 hours of logged apprentice appraisal. Okay.
That's a long you have to take, time.
Okay, I'm not done. You have to take 150 classroom hours at a school like Champions up in Willowbrook or like online. Pass all that, submit your log, submit your classroom certificates, and then you get to take the state's big 4-hour comprehensive exam. It is very difficult to get our licenses, but you.
Well, you're assessing value.
Right. They don't want. They figured out in 2009 that there was enough slackers out there that were just looking to get a buck, that would put something on there just.
Yeah.
And they weeded them all out. Let me tell you, I worked in a shop with 9 guys, and there's only 3 of us today that still do it.
Really?
Yes. In the state of Texas today, because of the new requirements, the average age of an appraiser is 62, and they're disgruntled. They don't like the new industry.
I mean, they can fall off of a roof and die.
Yeah, they're moving around pretty slow.
Wow, that blows my mind. Like,
there's 62? there's a third less appraiser. Yeah, 62 is the average age today. It's on the website, TLCB. Texas Appraiser Licensing and Certification Board. You can go. It's public knowledge. And
I had no idea, Reggie.
There used to be close to 30,000 appraisers in the state of Texas, and today there's less than 20,000 because there's no new blood coming in to replace these old guys that are going out. We are in high demand. That's why.
Is this why y'all aren't regulated?
This is why turn times have gotten so. There's so few of us now, and we
do have a lot of people that
we're getting shoved these jobs down our throat, and you know, and I don't have any choice with regard to some of the lenders because. They have performance ratings where they will knock you down on the list in your pecking order if you don't accept a certain number of files on a regular basis.
Really?
Yes. So if you look on there and you're like, wow, I've only taken 3 jobs out of this month out of the 10 that I'm supposed to have taken, I better take a couple from them. Well, then you only got, you know, then you got like one in Freeport and one in and Winnie.
Slim pickings.
Yeah. And so you got to take them just so you stay on their list, stay on their good graces, or you won't get their work offers anymore.
But there's so much work anyway.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it, but I turn away twice as much as I accept.
Really?
I did 400 appraisals last year, and I bet you if I had a full-blown assistant and somebody that I could trust in like that, I could have done over 1,000 of them. Like, that's what was offered to me.
Chop, chop, Reggie.
Yeah, I'm working on that. I'm training a typist assistant as we speak. So.
Oh, good, good, because that's important, and you have to be able to trust, and you have to be able to work well with somebody, you know.
It's mostly data entry, what I'm allowing.
Business.
You know, it's like, just me, but it's my
still,
business.
Still, it's your business. It's your bread and butter. Like, you know, for us, we're such control freaks when it comes to our files that it's hard to think about training an assistant the way I do things, the way I originate my
loans. I'm not an instructive type of individual. I'm like, here, watch me do this. All right, now you do it. Like, that's kind of how I am.
You know your limits. That's a great thing.
So, you know, but it's going to work out.
Well, of course it is.
This time next year, by spring, I feel like that'll be in full blown effect for me. It'll be taking
that
a lot
old
of my
machine.
Yes,
take
a lot of my daily burden off me.
That's a big deal because
it's just data entry, just all public knowledge stuff off the HCAD and the MLS that can be put into the form.
Yeah, I see.
Nothing actually appraiser specific. You know, with regard to
they're just prepping the form, the report for you, and
getting it ready for me to sit down and yep. It takes half the desk time away from me.
That's what I was about to say. I was like, well, I mean, I'm sure you'll be able to do so much more because
absolutely.
You're not messing with the tedious mundane crap.
No, then I'll have to do is, you know, accept and decline new orders and answer emails and do revisions and drive to the houses. And
so I do get and I do understand that we are in high demand of, you know, something that there isn't a whole lot of, you know, you guys. And this has, especially during the summer. You know, second quarter till I think things have slowed down a little bit right now.
They are slowing down.
But second and third quarter were absolutely fucking insane. Like, I can't even begin to tell you.
We saw some things in our markets that have never happened here before.
And I mean,
it makes me nervous.
You know, everything since I started doing this has been evolving. There hasn't been a constant yet.
Mm-hmm. It's not in real estate. That's why they have to have us.
But here's the deal. But I'm talking just in processes and, you know, rates, the way the market's been functioning, how, you know, it went, you know, the refi boom. Mm-hmm. It still has lasted longer than anybody
expected.
You
locked 2/3 of America in their houses for a year long. people are going to start thinking outside the box of what they could do to try to cut a couple of dollars, and refinance is one of them.
Well, I mean, and that's still going on. But then now switching from buyer's market, you know, to a seller's market.
That happened last year.
I mean, yeah, I feel like, what do you think, like October, like last quarter?
Things slow down in the fall and winters. So usually the changes that are going to occur with regard to trend like that happen in the off season. So, yeah, definitely when it was the fall and winter of last year is whenever things started to take that shift. And then it went from a buyer's market to a seller's market.
I sold my house last October, and I got way more for it than.
I'm selling my house right now.
And you're going to get good money for it. I mean, the inventory is so low right now. People are so desperate that they need to buy or find somewhere to live.
Well, the price hike on lumber slowed down new construction, okay, and it made the cost go up 10 to 15% overnight. So that pushes the burden off on the real estate on the resale end. So if you have a house that's, you know, less than 20 years old and in relatively good shape in a popular market, yeah, your values really went up this year.
Oh, mine sold within days, and this was before everything kind of hit the fan. You know, we had. I mean, I don't remember how many offers we had, but obviously a lot of it was investors.
I have a container in my driveway to throw away a bunch of old stuff and for my purge, and I don't have a sign up yet. And I've had three people stop by that I don't know and knock on my door.
I bet.
And I'm like,
but you know what?
Wow,
that's the market we're in right now, and you know it's sad because you know. I've never seen people scramble to pay $50,000 over asking price knowing it's not going to appraise.
Well, you know, and I don't mean to throw stones at people from different states or, you know, political backgrounds.
Throw them, baby, throw them.
We have a wave of people that are disgusted with how things have gone in California, and they're coming right here in waves. And it's my job to find out what drives our trend. So I ask, you know, hey, all right, this house is going for $40,000 over list. It didn't even, you know, like, are they from California? And
nine times out of ten,
I'd say about 50% of the time, I'm getting a yes. There is a drove of people coming from there, and they're going to come here, and they're going to drive our values up by overpaying like they did out there, because that's what they're accustomed to, and then they're going to vote their the way they like to vote, and they're going to make our state like California, you know. Then they're going to be like, wow, it's bad here now.
First of all, nobody can come un-Texas or Texas, like no.
And they're waiting for that to happen. Beto and all those people, you know.
Look, we're resilient. Texas is resilient.
Nothing will happen until they try to take our guns. Then we'll all unite against them.
Yes, this is true. And, you know, being a gun-toting citizen, I concur.
That makes you mad, mine on me.
Yes, you have to. This is our way of life. And even though a lot of people don't understand it, they don't have to. Just because it's different from how they do doesn't make it wrong.
They like the availability. They like affordable housing. They like that there's a lot of jobs here.
There's a lot of room to grow. People come here for, like, you know, it's Houston, Texas. This is where the jobs are. So, I mean, I know that we're used to having people come down here, you know, for the jobs. But now it's like, oh, shit.
Well, you have the big corporate thing now here, too. All these big companies, Tesla, Amazon, like all these big major players that have kept
they're popping up everywhere.
They're
outskirts.
And they're leaving California for the same reason, because their corporate taxes have been eating them up, and that's not going to change.
And you know, I don't think our viewers and our listeners understand how that affects value whenever you're assessing value.
Availability
on a home.
Of employment?
Yes.
There's almost nothing that drives the market stronger. You have a place like Tesla. This is what's happening in Austin. My parents live up there in Bastrop, and Tesla bought the property. They're building their building. They're going to come up there and have a whole manufacturing plant. It's going to be like 20,000 jobs. My parents' home value doubled in 3 years.
Wow.
That's something that's supposed to happen over like 10 years. Like, you know, literally like going from a $500,000 to a million. It's a safe thing to say like over 10 years, 10% annually.
Yeah.
They've seen 25% in the last 4 years. We saw that in Houston this year too. Measured it.
I feel like it kind of started like when 99 happened too. And there's
the Grand Parkway. Uh-huh. I was like, wow, 99. I don't remember.
No. You're
going way back. I wouldn't even appraise her back then. No, the Grand Parkway is going to do the same thing that the Beltway did to the city of Houston.
And I feel like
it's going to be
people don't think that way. I mean, I remember when Beltway went up and all this other jazz and nonsense, how cool it was. Like
markets like Magnolia and Tomball, okay, that were semi-rural before. And now they have the Grand Parkway ripping through it so that the average Joe that wants to commute can go out there and live and have their little acre or two. Mm-hmm. That has popularized that market like you would not believe.
Yeah.
The 99 is going to be just like the in 10 years, It'll be just like the Beltway. It'll be built out around the city, constant, all the way around. It'll be nothing but commercial strip centers and businesses all the way along that thing.
And have you noticed that they're all the same?
They look the same.
Well, it's all the same. It's all the same set of stores.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, and I'm
a, in corporate, they're all the same corporate buildings too. Halliburton, you see all these big names, they're just everywhere. That's all they.
I'm very big on support local.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any, you know, my mom used to get on to me and it's like, why in the hell would you pay this much for this if you can get it here for this? I'm like, because I'm supporting somebody who's trying to make their own way. You know, whether it's organic food mm-hmm. or a little co-op or, you know, she freaking can't. I don't care. I don't care. But if I see that you're making an effort, I'm going to buy it from you.
Right.
That's the way I get. That's my mindset. And
I'd much rather walk into a store and I'd drive across Houston and walk in if I could pay cash and put my hand on that product than order it offline. Absolutely.
I hate online shopping.
You always get, they screw you. You don't get what you're
at. People think I'm nuts. And I'm like, I know I'm not that old, but I would rather go, like you said,
I've been told that I'm very old in that regard. I am not a fan of online.
Me neither.
Like the purchasing?
Yeah.
I've got $500 worth of car parts, Jeep and Mustang parts in my garage that I got that were wrong. And because I'm such a procrastinator, I've never sent back, and now they won't take them back because I ordered them.
Tiss, tiss, Reggie.
Yeah.
Now you got
to
sell them.
I'm about to have this blowout sale in my driveway, so.
I love it. Well, so tell me. What else do you feel has changed in what you do now versus pre-COVID?
The definition of market value has changed. Okay, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have this clever little paragraph long thing.
Mm-hmm.
Property value is what a willing and informed buyer in an open competitive market is willing to pay, given proper representation, the buyer and seller, all right, blah, blah, blah. They get there. Today, or this past summer, market value changed to what you can convince one of 12 interested buyers who are overqualified to overpay
this
for your
property. This is so true.
So I don't know how that's going to affect things when it starts to the market correction or the stabilization starts to happen. I don't know what that's going to do. I don't know how that's going to swing the markets. I've been doing this 17 years, so I wasn't doing it long enough before the 08 bubble popped to see what led up to that.
Mm-hmm.
But something's going to happen. We're going to have some sort of market correction soon. We can't keep this up. The city of Houston growing at 25% annually is not going to maintain. Mm-hmm. Properties cannot double in value in 4 years.
Yeah.
It's.
I mean, and there's no, like, nobody can say exactly what is going to happen, right?
As long as they don't, you know, nothing gets subprime loans or people that have to have those. But as long as they don't do that and cut the legs out from under the banking industry again like they did, mm-hmm. they keep subprime pushed away. I think that this little moratorium they put on mortgages, it's going to have some sort of a ripple effect to our markets. Okay, you had for a year straight, you couldn't kick anybody out, you couldn't foreclose on anybody. You could, even if they didn't pay a single note, like, okay, well, now you can. That changed in September.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a huge rash of investment properties selling off now because these investors that had these things for last year and they got screwed out of their rent. I'd say I do two or three a week now of investments, which means investors are dumping properties because they're fed up with it. The government waved its magic wand and took a year of their compensation for that property away from them.
Well,
that's not right in my book, and
I don't agree with it. It's not right in any book because you shouldn't like be able to take some, you know, like this is mine.
We're in an industry that's federally regulated, so.
Yeah. Well, so are appraisers regulated?
By the state.
Hmm.
We're Texas Appraiser Licensing and Certification. It's part of TREC.
But not federal.
The federal government allows. Okay, there's the Appraisal Institute, which works hand in hand with each state to come up with the laws and the bylaws and stuff that govern what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But state to state, like if I mess up on a file and I'm going to get in trouble for it, it's a state thing. They send me to Austin. I get an attorney. And
what does that look like? Like, what do you mean mess up on a file?
Oh man, so of the three, I only network with two other appraisers right now.
Okay,
and I worked with them. I got my license, and they've both been sent to the state of Texas for a file. Okay, so you rub the borrower the wrong way, you cut a value, and it ruins the deal, and the seller gets pissed off.
But that happens all the time, not because.
Okay,
it's
well,
not.
You can do that and be courteous and professional about it, or you mm-hmm. can do that and be a jerk about it, or be absent about it, and not be available for what, you know, that kind of thing. People get mad. It's anybody who's involved in that transaction has the right that gets access to that appraisal can send that thing to the state, and it causes a hellstorm for us.
Really?
It's thousands of dollars. Even if you're found even if you're, you know, exonerated or whatever for what they said that you did, they're still going to make you take mentoring classes, and they're going to make you send an audit file every quarter so that they can check to make sure you're not doing whatever you did. Like, it's, you have, you have to go to Austin multiple times. It is a big headache. I've never been sent to the state, and I hope that never happens, but
goodness. You know,
yeah, it's something I don't want to, I don't have to go through.
I mean, and I get it, you know, just like in my world of mortgage and in the world of, you know, real estate agents, there are shitty LOs, agents, appraisers, and then there are, you know, those of
us. You know that we're the only person in the whole industry and the whole chain of what we do that has any type of retribution for them?
Well, we do too.
Okay, look, you could have a house, you could have a house that we know is worth half a million
jail
bucks.
Time.
Right, for doing fraud. Okay, I'm not talking about that. Okay. I'm talking about like for doing your job day to day.
Yeah.
Okay, you dot an I wrong or cross a T wrong and the deal falls through. Okay, there's no repercussion for you. All right, if I am involved in a transaction and it goes south, I'm the only one that can be sued. Okay. You could, okay. This is an example. This is an example. Let's say you have a house and everybody knows it's worth $500,000. An agent can come in and tell that seller, we're going to list it for $1 million. Okay. They can list it for $1 million. Another buyer's agent can show up and push it to their buyers and they can get it under contract for $1 million. And then you could do the loan for $1 million and it closes. And the only person that's going to be in trouble once that deal's finalized is the appraiser that said, this is worth $1 million. That's the only one.
Really?
Yes. Nobody. There's no that either one of those agents, buyer or seller or loan officer involved in that could have any type of thing happen to them. Only the appraiser.
See. Okay. So
now, if you go into a straw borrower type situation or something where you know and you're a willing participant in that, yeah, you can federal time on you.
You know, I have a lot of people that come to me that don't realize that what straw buying is, and they're like, yeah, just you know, I really want to help. You know, my mother sister's cat buy this house.
That's a lot of that was a lot of the trouble that cut
you can't do that.
Cut the industry apart back in 2008.
I'm like, we can do that if you want to call it
ninja
an
loans.
Home.
I'm just learning what this is, a ninja loan. No job, no income, no assets.
Oh, don't get me started.
They used to do that.
Well, back then, I feel like if you had a pulse, they would give you a loan.
Right, but didn't they realize that was what the problem was?
I feel like that's what had to happen so we could have the regulations that we have in place now.
Yeah, but they hit us with a hammer, man.
Oh, it was bad. I mean, but then, you know, that's where a lot of people were able to get a home. And then, like,
look, everybody can't have a home. I'm sorry.
Well, I agree.
Too irresponsible.
I agree. I take a lot of pride in how I was taught at TNT because we were taught how to assess the situation to set the borrower up for success. There's a lot of loan officers out there.
Yeah, the typical buyer needs a lot of coaching to get that process taken care of.
And that's what we do. Like, half of what we do is educate, right?
Right. I mean, you tell them, look, you're not in the best shape credit-wise, and for the next 6 months, you need to do this, this, and this, and then we can probably get you taken care of.
And we all have, like, our team, right?
Yeah.
I have my insurance people. I have my credit restoration people. I have my team of people that I know will make my borrower ready if for whatever reason they are not right now. So your typical LO will say, oh, sorry, you know, too bad, so sad, you're not ready, and then deuce.
Move on to the next one.
We don't do that, you know. I tell them, if you really want this, I'm going to set you up with a plan of action. It is up to you to follow that plan of action. And if you do great, you know, it'll get you there that much faster. But I also have people that come to me, they want the plan of action, they don't do shit, and then they come back to me, and then they wonder why they can't qualify again.
When I bought my first house, it was in 06, so right before the big real estate tumble. And my friend was an LO that I went to high school and college with, and he told me, he's like, all right, dude, here's your credit score. This is what you need to do. You need to go get you two unsecured cards, a gas card and like a, you know, a Visa. You need to use them every day, every month. Don't max them out. Don't pay them off. Like, keep them in that rotation, keep paying that thing. He's like, you know, pay all your stuff on time, that kind of thing. He's like, we'll get your credit up. And I went from having ghost credit to having like a 700 credit score in like 6 months. Mm-hmm. You know, now I have 800 credit score. But
you're just showing off now, Reg.
You know, 15 years in a house.
You know what, though? Like, I had my youngest borrower was a 19-year-old.
Wow. Good for them.
He came to me when he was, you know, 17. About to turn 18. And he's like, Miss Maria, I really want to buy a house. I'm losing money not being homeowner. And I'm like, this kid is on it.
Wow.
And I'm like, Aunt Marie is going to help you. And so he did. I got him with.
Is there a law? Like, what's the age limit? Is 18?
Well, yeah. I mean,
you have to be 18 to qualify for a mortgage?
We had to work on it because he had no credit.
Oh, yeah.
So I sent them to Liza, who's my credit gal. Mm-hmm. She helped him build his credit. But this child is just.
Driven.
I mean, he is just light years away from your average 18, 19 year old.
That's refreshing to know, though.
Look, that was one of my proudest moments was closing that child because he gets it. He's not concerned about the cars and the material crap.
He wants to make sure his dollar's doing something for him.
His down payment came from the money he made on stocks.
On socks?
Stocks.
Oh, stocks.
Yeah.
At 19, huh? Affluent.
And so I'm just like.
Self-affluent.
If I see somebody that wants it, I tell everybody, I will handhold you there. We will make it to the closing table. But I see, it's sad. I see adults our ages that can't even be bothered to, hey, maybe don't get your nails done. Hey, maybe don't eat out. Maybe sacrifice a little bit.
But you have to know that that kind of thing comes from your upbringing. If you're brought up in a household that the parents didn't have good credit and they struggled and didn't pay their bills properly, all that kind of stuff, more than likely you're going to end up being the same type.
Mm-hmm. But you reach a point when you become an adult.
That affects market value around town as well. I'll go into that in a minute if you'd like.
I would. But, you know, at some point you become an adult and you know what you want and you don't want, right? And at that point you're either going to let yourself be taught and molded, mm-hmm. like this kid did, and then you achieve what you want that much faster.
You got the house at 19?
Mm-hmm. We closed them this year.
Just, I mean, something introductory, like 100,000 or more, right around?
No, it was like 210.
Oh, wow.
When I said we were going to do this, I told him, baby, we're doing this.
That's great.
And we did it. And I'm proud of him.
That's unheard of.
This is why, like, my borrowers, they're I don't have children, nor do I want children. My borrowers are my children. They're my babies.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, it can be done. He just proved to everybody that could see that post that it can be done. So, but like you were saying, you were talking about how driving market value.
Okay. You have, you know, I'm not going to label any type of, you know, person or anything around. You know, I can't do that by law. Okay. But you have parts of town where large groups of people of the same, classification group, and they historically don't take care of their financial responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And that affects their markets, okay?
Absolutely.
When you have that trend of that individual grouping into a market en masse and not taking care of their financial responsibilities, that part of town suffers with regard to because the houses get sold off cheaper, they get short-sold and foreclosed on. All right, that trend, it's a snowballing effect. So that's very important.
And that's, maintaining your credit and taking care of your... different parts of towns with so many different ethnicities. I mean, it's not just one or another.
We live in the most diverse city in our country.
And you see it in every single, ethnicity. It's not just one or the other. It's like every people type has the different classes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just because of what you have or what you don't have. It really does boil down to mindset. I wasn't taught, about credit. I remember my ex-husband and I, we were young and stupid. We're 19 and 20. You know, we went and racked up so much debt because we didn't know any better. We did.
In my 20s, it was just like, what can I charge and not pay for? It was almost like a game.
Exactly. And terrible. So nobody taught us until we totally had to eat it, learn, pay it off.
Go 7 years without having any kind of credit for it.
But we learned early. You know what I mean? We messed up bad, but we learned early, which is why, we were homeowners in our early 20s.
It took me till I was 30.
You know what I mean? But even now, one of my greatest, I guess, accomplishments is my mom. It's just me and my mom. And I'm first generation born here, okay? So she doesn't...
Where's your mom from?
Mexico.
Excellent.
And she, in coming into some money and selling, properties here and there, I was like, what do you want to do with your money? And she goes, I think I want to do this and that. And then she goes, I'd like to get an investment property. And for me, that was like my proudest moment as a daughter of an immigrant because she gets it.
Right. Finally. How can my money work for me?
Exactly. And yeah. I was just like, oh my God, she actually is watching, listening, and you know, what I'm doing, which I'm like, I feel like all the generational curses have been broken now.
Real estate's a tangible thing. You can put your hands on it. It makes sense to a lot of people in that regard. It's not going anywhere. You know, it could burn or flood, that kind of thing. But
when your mindset's not there, I had to learn this. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it just makes me very proud that, you know, I mean, when that came out of her mouth, I almost cried.
She got one? She bought one?
That's what we're in the process, you know, like, you know, and so.
Out there in y'all side of town, northwest?
Oh, we haven't even, I don't know.
You haven't gone that far?
You know, no, the house she lives in, she's lived there her whole life, and she refuses to get rid of it. I'm like, all right, no problem. You know, nice little investment home.
Where is it, if you mind me asking?
In Northwest Houston.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a small little, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, but nice big
starter home. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, she just, you know, was a single mom with 2 kids, you know.
So maybe she should buy something nice that she enjoys better and rent that thing out.
Well, the thing is now she understands collecting properties. When I say collecting properties, she now understands it.
Collecting for them?
No, collecting properties, like actually
building up your inventory of your rent properties.
Mm-hmm. So it's just nice for her to have that mentality, whether she chooses to go that way or not.
Some of the most wealthy people that I know are, you know, 20-plus property owner.
But, you know, and I don't care how old she is now, because she's older, you know. She's in her 60s, but it finally clicked and made sense. And for me, that's a huge win.
Yeah.
It's a huge victory because, you know,
one of the largest hurdles is finally getting your head in the game.
It's mindset. And people don't, they're like, oh, I don't have the money. Oh, I don't. I'm like, well, if you keep having that attitude, you're going to have shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it's just nice. I'm very proud, you know, and I wouldn't be here without CNC Mortgage. You know, they have taught me well. And I feel like
you're passing along.
And it just makes me proud, you know, especially because, again, first generation immigrant mom, you know. And so I feel like
that's the dream, though.
But if if my generation could teach that generation, I feel like that also can drive, you know, the market, if you will, in a different way.
I think market-wide, people are starting to understand that our markets are stable to increasing, so that real estate's going to be a safe investment for the most part. You know, and now all these inner city areas are getting revitalized. You know, the what would you call the slums or the ghettos of the past, they're just about gone. Like, there's $300,000-$400,000 homes in every part of town that you could call a city or the hood. Yes.
Yeah.
There's new people living there and B&Ws driving, you know, living in these $300,000-$400,000 little boxy stucco things.
I really wish that I would want to, but I don't. Like,
live
I can't.
It's too busy.
I was raised in Jersey Village, Texas.
Live in a suburb like that. It's a very rare occasion that you're going to have your life affected by like some big major traffic incident or something like that. When you live down inside the loop, it's a daily thing, you know. It's construction. The 610 at 59 interchange has been under construction since I was a child.
Do you remember when I-10 was under construction before it became this beautiful thing?
Yeah, it happened while I worked off Britmore and I-10 getting my appraiser license.
Well,
I went through 5 years of hell because of that.
I used to run a paint and body shop out in Denver Harbor.
Ooh.
And it was in the heart of.
I know where Denver Harbor is.
The middle of
Galena Park.
All of that construction every single day. So I like having a 20-minute max commute.
That doesn't involve a major freeway?
In the opposite direction of traffic.
Yeah, but that's just rare.
Well, then I'm blessed.
People just kill for jobs like what y'all have, where y'all can live and work in the same part of town.
Hey, you just got to be good at math.
Now, I'm good at math, but you know, the simple logistics of the fact is that I live in a part of town that's built out. There's not a bunch of new construction. And that 7 out of 10 of my orders that I get are an hour away from on the north and northwest and north sides of Houston. Yeah.
So I have a question for you. What do you see? I mean, you've been doing this long enough to, you know, have an opinion. What do you think is going to happen with the lack of appraisers?
Like, okay, I can tell you exactly. No, I know exactly what's going to happen.
Do you see people coming in?
There's
do
this
you
new
see
thing.
Young blood?
No, I see a lot of people calling me. Asking me if I would consider taking on a trainee. That happens weekly.
Really?
Hey, I have a degree. I know what you make as an appraiser. I know what you can make. Like, you know, can you apprentice me? I'm like, no, I can't do that. Okay. So now there's this new thing called a property inspection waiver. You know
what
it is.
Oh, yes, yes,
the old PIW. Okay, that is the first step to getting rid of us. Look, in the 80s.
But you can't.
Listen, in the 80s, the state of Texas decided that if you have a survey and it's existing and the house hasn't changed and the seller's willing to give it to the buyer, you don't have to get a new survey. You know what that did to surveyors in a calendar year? That cut 50% of their business out. Okay, so this property inspection waiver thing, if that becomes a trend and you get enough loan officers and agents and buyers out there that are pissed off because their appraisal came back a month late, short, then they're going to start making legislation and they're going to wave their little magic federal wand and they're going to, I'm telling you, we've already seen the beginnings of trying to make us obsolete.
Really? Because absolutely. I'm thinking, I mean, obviously, you guys, if you don't know this now. A bank isn't going to lend you money if value has not been assessed, right? And that's where our appraisers come in.
So what does a property inspection waiver do? All it does is say that.
Yes, but, okay.
I don't even know what it looks like. I've never seen one.
Well, it's just a form.
Okay.
But here's the deal. Like, whenever we run, you know, running through our system and get a PIW, you know, it makes sense because it's not like this old rundown house, you know.
It's got to be best case scenario, I would imagine. Like people with 800 plus credit scores.
Yes, but
solid down payment.
It's not like all of them. So I'm thinking, how can that come and get rid of you guys when not all transactions are best case scenario?
I mean, you got to think too, the people that are in our field right now, the majority of them, especially in the state of Texas, are old. They don't care what happens to us. They're working their last few years right now until they can just check out. 62.
Die.
Yeah. So I don't think they're concerned with what's left behind, you know, and here I am right in the middle of my career. You know, I've got at least another 10 or 15 years in this. I'm concerned about it legitimately. I've already had several files that I got the order on, got it printed up, and then got it taken back from me and because it was issued a PIW. They got them after they'd ordered it, I guess. I don't know.
Do you still get paid?
I didn't do it. No, I didn't do the report. Like, I got the order, and, like, the next day before I even get an appointment on it, I get it taken back out of my queue, and they said, oh, we had a PIW on this.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. Boy, am I full of questions today. So whenever, like, we or, like, the I like to use their names, but my processors, whenever we order an appraisal. Mm-hmm.
Goes to the AMC.
And it gets, like, I see sometimes, well, a lot of times, the appraiser rejects it.
Sure. I turn down 2/3 of the things that are assigned to me.
And is it just because you're too busy, like, distance?
Usually, okay. Usually, or I get offers in, like, Winnie, Beaumont.
I see.
Port Arthur.
But, like, this crap is in town. Like, this is, like, Houston, Texas.
Okay, look, there's certain things that I won't do.
Okay, well, see, that I'm learning.
It's just, you know, stupid little things that. Like, I got these offers. I've done several of them. Crystal Beach, I love going down there. It's a nice drive. Take the ferry, mm-hmm. You know, eat up some of the day. Okay, but now there's a bunch of investment properties down there. People, they buy them, they rent them out in that sand and sea pool, Cobb, and all that. Okay, so the banks are doing loans on these, and they want us to take it and find rental comps and put it on the rental form, which is designed for long-term rentals. And they're these weekend rentals. Okay, so if you do it, all right, to rent it for this weekend for $1,000, $500 a day.
Like Airbnb.
You project that out to 30 days, that's like $15,000 that thing generates in a month if it was rented every day. That is not your typical income-producing rental property like you get up here in Houston. You know, it's like from $1,500 to $2,500 is like the typical rental for a month of a traditional home in the city of Houston. Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I've gotten two of those in the last month where I could have made $1,000 for a single appraisal to drive down for 2 hours to Crystal Beach and do a simple little beach house to measure, or, you know, only thing that's hard about it is tapping the report and making it make sense.
Hmm.
They want those numbers to make sense. So you have to go in
and this is on new builds, huh?
It's on new and resales. People are buying them. I'd say 7 out of 10 houses that are over there are in some sort of a rental pool. The people will allow it to be rented on certain holidays just to make a little money on it. Okay. But it's not like an investment property.
Sure. Whatever.
They share it. They use it this weekend. Next weekend, they've got strangers in it. That's not like what we have up here, like what they're used to us reporting on, mm-hmm. where you have a house. I've never lived in it, never spent a night in it, okay? And I rent this person year-round.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
No.
Okay, so I avoid those.
And I'm sure we've seen a lot of that because of Airbnb and
it's become so popular.
Or whatever.
You got your one little closet in the house that you can lock that nobody can get into but you. It's got your specific food and sheets that you like to sleep on. the rest of the house is just like a motel or hotel. You know, it's you have strangers in it all the time.
I hadn't thought about that aspect of it.
Yeah. I don't want people sleeping in my bed.
Ew.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Doing what people do? No way.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
So, another question. My mind is working now. Mm-hmm. So, I'm seeing a lot of, and I understand that it's because of the material cost being driven up, but on new builds, especially out there, they're coming in low.
Okay. So, and during COVID, mm-hmm. I have a friend that sells bulk lumber.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he doesn't sell like Home Depot. He sells them to Home Depot and Lowe's. Like, yeah. He's the one that, okay. He tells me that there's only like four or five major corporate players in that business in the big heavy lumber industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that they all just sat down last year and decided, you know what? We're just going to charge this from now on. There wasn't a shortage. They didn't run out of lumber to sell to the industry. They just, they were just ready to see a big increase in their gains. So they all jumped they all jumped on board. I did a house in 30 days before my house, the same floor plan from the same builder on the same street sold for like $40,000 less. And now it's my hurdle to get over to accommodate for that in my value. Okay, look, things drive pricing up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But 2 + 2 = 4 in our business. We're sorry. That's how I look at it. I'm sorry, builder, that you're now getting charged $5 for a board that cost you $3 last month. But that's not my problem.
Because that got really crazy.
No, it happened.
I mean,
it got to where I wouldn't do new construction. I quit doing new construction files for months.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not going to mess with that. You're either committing semi-fraud or you're pissing off a buyer and a builder.
Well, I saw a lot of people, you know, get their house that was being built for them.
Cost is not equal value. Does not equate directly to value.
A lot of people lost their home. Like, they couldn't afford it anymore. Like, the financing didn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, but think about those fortunate people that bought their house a calendar year ago. And now the same floor plan on the same street selling for $60,000 more just because of lumber costs. They're loving it. Yeah.
There's a lot. For you guys listening and viewing us, there's a lot that goes into this market. There's
a lot of things that can affect our markets.
There are so many facets.
Rates, construction costs, employment.
Everything.
Construction, traffic. City, like when you have a city like Houston that's gone through the growing pains we've gone through the last 5 years with all mm-hmm. these roadways being redone, mm-hmm. that's changed things. That's made certain markets that were inaccessible, accessible.
True.
It's made parts of town.
Like we talked about 99.
Yes, that drives our markets, definitely. And we're supposed to discuss that in our reports. What affects marketability? The banks want to know, all right, is this thing in an area where employment's on the rise or on the fall? If we get stuck with this house in a year, are we going to be able to sell it? Can we get what we got in it? Like that's what they see through the eyes of the appraisal.
Then why would they want, why would they want to get rid of you?
Because there's enough people like y'all and like these agents and these snippy borrowers and stuff that are getting rubbed the wrong way right now. That's all it takes. Once you do that, once that happens to like a Texas state senator's cousin, I'm hypothetical.
It's true, though.
Okay, then that guy complains and hears about that. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go talk to some of my senator buddies about that. We're going to see if maybe something can be done on the legal side of that. And they get up there and they start talking. Well, look at this, man. This is the trend. Yeah, these people are all losing. Okay, that's all it takes. Back in 08, when everything fell, Cuomo, that governor from New York up there, him and his crew developed the Home Valuation Code of Conduct, which created overnight the appraisal management company system. You know what those guys are worth now?
Because
they all own one.
I can only imagine.
Are you talking about a $1 billion industry in our country that was created from one piece of legislation? It screwed our business. It was a sledgehammer blow to they needed to change, but they smacked us. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that makes us fearful for our jobs.
Do you really think that appraisers will become obsolete?
Not totally. I think that we're going to be
more rules.
I think they're going to be sidestepped a lot in the coming years with these PIWs and stuff like similar things.
Automated. I see this, but
Zillow
but
type
it's
things.
Hard.
Those type things like Zillow, they're becoming more and more close to.
You know what?
Like,
I got
they're getting it figured out. Like they're,
I don't like Zillow. I never have liked Zillow.
No, it's a very averaging system.
I never will like Zillow. But here's the deal. Like the other day, I got one of my agents, got one of our borrowers under contract, and I got a Zillow contract.
Now they're representing people like Open Door?
Dude, I was like, the hell is this? I was like, first of all, the borrower's name's not even on here all the way because, he had like five. First of all, like you could. It was so vague, and I'm like, what are we?
That's how I get those when they're coming from like Open Door. I'm supposed to read. I have to read the whole contract on every purchase, and I get these ones from Open Door, and they're like six times over scanned electronic kind of things, and you can barely read anything. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
I was baffled. I was like, is this even legal?
I didn't know they were selling houses now.
Well, I don't know, but
you know why Zillow doesn't work well, right?
Hmm.
Okay, let's take an area like where you're up there, like they're in Cypress, okay, like a neighborhood like Bridgeland. All right, you have $1 million houses around a little lake system that goes through there, you know, in, or like Town Lake where you have a boatable. Okay, well then you have the ones on the outskirts of the neighborhood that back up to like Tuckerton or some major street and they're not worth anything. Hmm. Okay, Zillow doesn't take that into consideration.
What?
Zillow goes in there and goes, here's your average of all the houses right here in this little ring. Well, that includes that $1 million house and that $300,000 house out there that backs up to the 290.
Zillow's like a Credit Karma.
It's a very broad averaging tool. It's a dangerous tool.
It's not.
It pumps up a lot of people that shouldn't be pumped up, and it tells people that should be pumped up that
they're not accurate.
It's very inaccurate.
Credit Karma, Zillow, very, very, very inaccurate, but people swear by it.
Oh, I laugh. Man, somebody comes to me about that crap. I love it.
I just have to be very patient.
Zillow and HGTV are the bane of our industries. They're cancer that should be snuffed out.
Well, people don't understand that HGTV is paid actors.
Okay, it's reality TV, but it's not reality.
No, it's half the time they're not even married to each other. They don't even know each other.
I do houses. I do investments all the time. Okay, you know how many investments I see that pan out like those things they show on those shows?
None.
You know how many times people can go buy a house and this flip it thing and all that mentality? Oh, we bought this house for $250. We're going to remodel. We're going to get $600 for it. Ugh, it does not happen.
That's the farthest from the truth, and we've seen it.
I see those once a year. I'll see this. I'm like, wow.
It's a pain in the butt to even like go through getting an investment property because they ask you for so much stuff, and you have to have so many reserves. And
the only people that work for are people who are affluent and can pay cash for stuff and snatch them up on the dime like that. They don't have to go through all the process. It speeds it up for them. Those are the people that can go out there and do that successful flipping thing.
I agree.
It is not like they show on television, and people are dumb like that.
Nothing is like they show on television or Zillow or Credit Karma. Don't believe everything you see, you guys. I mean, we have somebody sitting right here who is telling us how it really is. But you know what blows my mind, Reg? They're going to let it go in here and out here. And they're going to go keep watching TV, going on Zillow and using credit cards.
And they'll try to buy a house next year, and they'll go for a loan, and they'll send somebody like me out there, and they're going to say, well, I looked on Zillow, and this thing said it was worth $200,000. Why is it only coming in at $175,000? Because you let a robot try to tell you what your house is worth? an algorithm or whatever it is? You know?
It's algorithms. You're right.
Okay, so there it is. Take that.
I don't get it. I'm not scared, but, I mean, I am bracing myself for the changes that are going to come. Because changes are coming.
Definitely.
And I don't really care what, you know.
Real estate's too volatile of a thing for me to get rid of us all, I think, personally. To get rid of appraisers
like,
altogether.
I don't think that would happen.
It rises and falls every year. Lots of things affect it. This pandemic thing, this is something new for us.
Well, that was my whole point. So that was my whole point to saying that ever since I started doing this,
I had no idea what it was going to do to our industry.
Everything has. Well,
I thought I was going to lose my job, and I had I had my second best year of all appraising last year. Second best
you know
year
what?
Income-wise.
I didn't think I was going to close as many loans as I closed last year, but this year has been 100-fold.
Better?
Better.
My file count's not as high this year as it was last year, but I have a lot of distractions in my life right now, so.
Oh, Reg.
Damn, I went there, didn't I?
I love that we have inside jokes.
Moving on.
All right. Well, we're almost running out of time.
Okay.
I'm not going to pimp you out because the third party company has to ask for your order.
Oh, yeah.
Usually I tell people, how can they get a hold of you? But they don't need to get a hold of you.
I mean, unless it's not for a mortgage and they need some kind of appraisal advice or services.
Which we would.
They can reach out to me directly. Sure. But anything for a mortgage is always going to go through an AMC.
Exactly.
They come just like the regular ones do.
Well, I'm really happy that you made. I know you're busy, and I really respect.
No, I enjoy this.
Time.
There's a lot of air between what we do and what people think we do.
That's why I like having y'all on here. And it's like, the reason the show is called Real Talk with Maria is because if you got to drop an F-bomb, drop it. But I want you to tell it how it is. Not how people think it is. Not PC.
I'm not very good at sugarcoating stuff.
Well, that's what I tell people.
I think that's why I'm successful at what I do.
We're not Willy Wonka. One. And two, I'm in mortgage. This is financing.
This is factual.
There is no sugarcoating in financing.
Oh, you have this? All right, you can get that. That's
and
it.
And that's it. You know, we're not selling you a house. You know, you're assessing value. You know, I'm assessing your situation. I'm assessing riskability.
I like that part of my job. I can smack somebody in the mouth with my information type thing, you know?
Yes.
Oh, this is what you thought, huh? Well, this is what it is. Like.
But there is no gray. I mean, you know, it's like it's either this or it's this.
Lots of homeowners would like to think that there's that gray area, but
you know what I tell a lot of my people, and I mean, yes, it comes across harsh, but you know, take it or leave it. My job is to come up with a solution and or an option for you. Whether you like that solution or option is no longer my problem. I've done my job.
Sometimes people don't like to hear what they need to hear.
Well, I'm the wrong gal to come to then, and clearly you're the wrong dude to come to.
Yeah, because I'm going to tell you exactly how it is.
So, all right, Reggie. Well, I really appreciate you coming on.
Yes, ma'am. This has been great.
Taking time out of your busy day, because I know you're running all over. But I really feel like you gave my viewers and my listeners a huge insight onto the appraiser that everybody likes to hate on. You know what I mean?
We're people too.
Well,
I had to go through it. I had to have my house appraised when I bought it. I went through the same thing.
We all do, but people forget. So, you know, I appreciate the fact that we know that you guys are short-staffed, short-handed. You do not have enough, you know,
it's
hours
not by our design.
Day.
Like, we're victims of legislation. We're in this situation literally because the state stepped in and overregulated our industry. They've asked for this.
Well, and now we're innocent bystanders, right? Because there's consequences not only for you guys, but for everybody that you're servicing.
Yes.
So you guys stay tuned because we're going to have Reggie back because I know something's going
to
happen.
Sure, I'd love to come
back. In the next 6 months, I just know it, and then you're going to come and tell us I told you
so. Yeah, we can do it again in the spring whenever things start to warm up, and we'll see
how
things are going then.
Awesome. All right, Reggie.
Awesome.
Well, thank you guys. We will see you next week. Reggie, have a wonderful day.
Thanks for having me on.
And we will see you guys next week.